أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Islam in Focus. Today's program is our 44th in the series Sources of Islam, and it's our 12th from the segment on the authenticity of the Quran. I'm your host, Rashad Nimish, and here with me from St. Mary's University is Dr. Jamal Batali. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Batali.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
Dr. Jamal, could you give our viewers, please, a summary of last week's program?
Okay. Last week's program was the third program on the arrangement of the Quran, and we indicated that some of the objections raised by some Orientalists do not really have that firm support. We did discuss in the beginning the issue that was raised with respect to surah number 8 and 9, whether they should have been two surahs or one surah, or whether they should have appeared in that order or not. And we indicated that while the report of difference in terms of its order is not a very strong one, but the consensus seemed to be that they were revealed indeed in that particular order as witnessed and testified to by thousands of people, many of whom were eyewitnesses. That we said, ultimately, there is absolutely no theological significance to that whatsoever. It is the same content, it's the same surahs. There is absolutely no question of deletion or addition or change in the Quran, and there's more evidence that it was ordered as such. We also discussed some of these Orientalist objections, such as those ideas presented by Wansborough, Radwell, Bell, and Arthur Jeffrey. And after examination of many of their claims, we have seen that really they are contradictory to all available evidence. In fact, towards the end of last time, I was going to say that even one of them, Arthur Jeffrey, went as far as making a fantastic claim, you know, that the first surah in the Quran, known as the opening, Al-Fatiha, was not originally part of the Quran. With absolutely no evidence, but simply guesswork.
Maybe I'll pick up on that. That sounds like a real drastic claim. Now, on what did he base this claim?
It wasn't based on any historical evidence. It wasn't based on any report, authentic or unauthentic even. I think what he basically said is that if you examine that particular opening surah in the Quran, you notice that it is mainly a sort of prayer, a supplication, that is the human addressing the Creator in supplication. Whereas he says that the style generally in the Quran is that Allah speaks, that Allah addresses us as humans, but this one is human addressing Allah. And he says maybe it wasn't part of it, and that, like I say again, is substituting guess or substituting facts with his own guesses. What Jeffrey forgot, however, in terms of this reasoning, which is quite deficient really, is that it is true that the Quran is the word of Allah, and that it is quite often the case that Allah addresses humanity and tell them or inform them. But in the meantime, Allah also teaches us as humans how to pray to Him. So when part of the Quran include this kind of prayers, it's not the reverse really, but it shows us how we as humans can pray and invoke His mercy. On the other hand, another reason why, again, that reasoning of Jeffrey is very deficient is that the opening surah of the Quran is not the only place in the Quran in which the human prays to Allah, or Allah teaches us how to pray to Him. Again, to save time, I might just give some reference. I leave it to the intelligence and judgment of the viewers, which I do respect, to check it on their own to see the validity of his claim. In Surah 2, in passage 286, it is basically human praying to Allah. That's not only the first, that's the second surah. In Surah number 3, in Ayah 192 through 194, these are all basically human again praying to Allah. Why pick particularly on the first opening surah of the Quran? Jeffrey also seemed to have forgotten that this unsubstantiated guess of his really would have absolutely no weight as compared with the unanimity that has existed for 1400 years since the days of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that the opening surah of the Quran, short as it may be, is part and parcel of the Quran, that it is recited by millions, hundreds of millions of Muslims five times every day in their prayers, and the prayer is invalid actually without the recitation of that particular surah or passage, surah or chapter in the Quran. This is the kind of problem, like I said, with some of the Orientalists' approaches, from which we can safely conclude that the only valid order, both for the passages within the same surahs or the order of the surahs within the Quran, is the one that we have in the Quran in our hands, which has always been there ever since it was revealed to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And definitely, if at one point or the other we as humans are not able to fully discern or comprehend why did Allah order or command this particular order of the Quran, it doesn't mean that there is no wisdom. There must be some possible reason behind it.
Now let us examine some issues relating to the arrangements of the chapters. The first thing that may be most striking is that the Quran seems to start off with a very short chapter and is followed by considerably longer ones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there any reason behind that?
Well, okay, before getting into possibilities of reasons, maybe I should just take a couple of minutes to clarify one point so that at least we'd be on the right railing before we plunge into, you know, trying to explain what possible wisdom is behind that. You see, when we talk about issues pertaining to the matters of revelation, I'm not sure that there's any scholar who can make a claim and say, now I understand fully the divine wisdom. At least no humble scholar that I know of have ever made that claim. And as Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, indicated that in describing the Quran, that it is a book from which the scientists and scholars never feel satiated. In other words, he's always eager to learn. There's something to be learned from the Quran. He said also, لا تسمع عجائبه, the wonders of the Quran are never exhausted, and that's manifested in our age. In a previous series, or parts of the series, I should say, we discussed in detail the scientific miracle of the Quran and many of the things that we are discovering now that many people for hundreds of years could not understand. Why does the Quran make this kind of references? So nobody can claim that all of these wisdoms have been discovered or can be discovered in one point of time or the other. It's a kind of continuous matter. And on the matter also of arrangement of the Quran, the same rule applies. No one claims that he has reached a full comprehension of why it was the divine command or wisdom to have the Quran arranged in that particular way, or what connection is there between one surah or the other in full. But among the best who wrote on the subject, trying somehow humbly to make some contribution to that, is the great scholar of the Quran, Jalaluddin As-Suyuti, who lived in the 9th century of Hijrah, so that would be equivalent roughly to the 15th century in the Common Era. And he wrote a book actually called Tanasuq al-Durar fi Tanasuq al-Suwar. Can be translated more or less like the coordination of pairs on the harmony of the surahs or chapters of the Quran. Relatively recently, his book was published in Egypt, in Cairo, by Darul Ihtisam under the title of Asrar Tartib al-Quran, that is the secrets of the order or arrangement of the Quran. And it included a very nice introduction by the Abdul Qadir Atta, who introduced the book. And I feel that there is nothing wrong shedding some light on what As-Suyuti mentioned about the order of the surahs of the Quran, but we should not take his ideas or suggestions as the only explanation or possible explanation, but simply a sort of reflection of a renowned scholar of the Quran. I hope with this at least introduction, perhaps we can touch on the question that you raised. Now we understand the limits or the boundaries of what we mean by why, or what is the wisdom behind that. Now your question is that Quran starts first with one short surah, the opening surah of the Quran, and then it is followed by substantially longer surahs, and that's correct. There have been a number of explanations by Suyuti and others. I actually mentioned a few others. Suyuti, for example, say that even though this first opening surah in the Quran is very short, 7 verses, it really summarizes everything in the Quran, and that is why it used to be called Umm al-Quran, the mother of the Quran, the mother of the book, the base. Why? As Zamakhshari, for example, as a scholar, said that in that short surah there is praise to the Creator, there is worship of the Creator, there are aspects of ordaining the good and forbidding the evil or indecency, there are aspects of glad tiding and warning, that is for believers and unbelievers, there is both. Fakhruddin al-Razi tried to look not from a contradictory point of view, maybe from another angle, and he noted that this short surah covered 4 essential aspects of Islam: establishing the divinity of the Creator, speaking about the hereafter, speaking about prophethood, and speaking about freedom of choice. Al-Baydawi divided the contents of that surah, I should say, into 2 basic areas: theoretical things or conceptual aspects and practical aspects. Al-Ghazali said that there are a summary in that surah also of introducing or making the listener of the Quran understand something about the divine attributes, identifying and specifying the straight path that leads to the Creator, and describe what the case will be when we return back to Him. So you could go on and on giving various angles, all of which really make sense. They're not contradictory, just like trying to reflect on it. I tried to humbly summarize some of these opinions and just more or less crystallize them in a simple to follow or easy to follow order. And as you see here in that first column, the opening chapter, the first one, contains aspects pertaining to belief, that is praise of the Creator, admission that He is the Lord of the universe, one of His attributes, merciful, that He is also the judge, unto whom all affairs are to be returned. A second basic aspect is practice, that is to implement those beliefs and to translate them into actual practice, and that involves worship. But worship, of course, in Islam is very broad. It doesn't mean just prayer or supplication or rituals. It involves every aspect of human living. Thirdly, to be steadfast. That is one basic point that the first surah makes. It is not enough to believe or practice, but to avoid slipping, to avoid backsliding, and whether this backsliding is a deliberate rejection of truth or being misguided or misled by inaccurate and unauthentic type of information. So whichever way you look at it, just one of the ways of putting together some of those basic points and why this appears in the very first surah.
I see. Now, in what aspect or in what way are the first and the second chapters connected or related?
Well, there seem to be a great deal of interrelatedness, not only between the various portions in the same surah or unit, but also between successive units. In this table here also, there is a humble attempt to just relate some of the points based on available literature. But if you notice there, for example, if you compare column 1 and 2, that is surah number 1 with surah number 2, one is very short, one is the longest in the Quran. And take some of the basic elements or items. Surah number 1 deals with the lordship of Allah, exclusive lordship of the universe. Surah number 2 seems to detail or give more detail about this lordship by describing how he is the creator of heavens and earth, how he created the primordial life, the creation of Adam. So these are all, you might say, a sort of elaboration on the meaning of Allah as being the Lord of the universe. Secondly, the first surah deals with one divine attribute, mercy. In the second surah we find manifestation of that mercy, that he is forgiving, talking about how he forgave Adam and Eve after they ate from the forbidden tree, that this is a manifestation of that mercy. It talks about his mercy by blessing Prophet Abraham, by the bounties that he gave to Prophet Moses. A third item in the first surah is a divine attribute of judgment, that Allah is the judge. Now, in the second surah, there is elaboration on what judge means by describing our responsibility, individual responsibility as human beings before the Creator. It describes, for example, the hellfire or punishment for those who reject the way of life ordained by the Creator. The first surah contains in a very brief way something about the worship of Allah. Now in the second surah there is specification how to worship Allah by dealing with aspects like prayer, fasting, charity, worshipping Allah by following his path in economic, political or social life. Okay? The first surah deals with guidance in a very abbreviated way, that seeking or praying to Allah to grant us guidance to his straight path. Now, in the second surah, it specifies how can we seek that guidance. The very beginning of the second surah actually indicates that if one is to seek guidance, he has to seek it in the word of Allah, and the word of Allah is in the Quran. So Quran is the source of that guidance. Indicating that the Quran is his word, okay, and indicate also that it was one message, that the same message that Allah has revealed to all prophets that constitute the universal guidance of mankind. Finally, in Surah 1, there is warning against slipping or backsliding. That is, once you believe and practice, try to keep steadfast, keep careful, not to go back again to a state of unbelief. But in the second surah, it indicates to us in some details what kind of deviations can lead the person to slip from the true path of pure, immaculate monotheism. In the second surah, there is emphasis on the invitation of the Jews, the Israelites, because there is a lot about them in that particular surah, inviting them to believe in the last prophet, Prophet Muhammad, and to accept the final revelation. So the connection seems to be quite reasonable, my humble understanding.
Well, the connection, or should I say the observation, mm-hmm. does that hold between the second and the third chapter still?
I think it does, and in fact the chart also, if you compare the second and the third column, you find something similar. So let me just go through that rather briefly, because I think the basic notion now is obvious. We talk, for example, in the second surah about the attribute of creation, that Allah is the creator. On one hand, it talks here about the creation, the primordial creation. 3 deals also with another type of creation, that is the creation in the wombs of mothers, and that's actually the beginning of that surah. In surah number 2, it talks about the creation of Adam from dust, that is by the will of the Creator. In the third surah, it talks about the creation of Jesus from a virgin mother, again by the will of Allah. Mercy. Okay, we talked here in the second surah about Allah as forgiven, the bounties that he gave to Abraham and Moses. But part of that, the coverage in the second surah, is the prayer of Prophet Abraham that God may provide guidance to mankind through his progenies. In the third surah, it indicates that it was Muhammad, the last prophet, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, who came in response, or Allah sent him in response or an answer to the prayer of Abraham, since many people have been blessed already through the Israelite prophets and the finally through the other branch of the Abrahamic family tree, that is through Prophet Muhammad. The second surah dealt with the, for example, the responsibility and description of the hellfire. Three gave more information about paradise, the other side of the coin. So there's punishment, there's reward. The second surah specified some of the acts of worship mentioned in general in the first surah. The third one gives much more details in many respects about some of the detailed aspects of life and how to worship Allah in a practical sense. The second dealt with the Quran being the essence of the guidance to mankind, being the word of Allah. The third one deals with how to understand the Quran. Actually, it begins with talking about allegorical verses in the Quran versus ones which are conclusive in meaning and so on. It removes any doubt about the Quran being the word of Allah. It places Muslims as the heirs of that one message that all prophets received, that since they have received the last message, it is their responsibility to carry it to the world. In the second surah, we talked about invitations, for example. We talked first about deviations, by way of explaining how could we avoid backsliding by examining the history of previous peoples. Now, in the third surah, it keeps dealing also with other forms of deviations and backsliding. The second surah deals with or emphasizes more on the invitation of Jews or Israelites to believe in the last prophet, Muhammad, peace be upon him. The third one, since it deals with Jesus, peace be upon him, it ends also inviting Christians to believe in the last prophet. And as mentioned before, all prophets are like brothers. They are all fulfilling the same duty. They are all servants of the Creator. So it's an invitation for both to unite under the same Creator, the same last authentic and authoritative revelation. So the connection is not restricted just between one, two. Actually, if you go through the whole Quran, perhaps you might see some pattern of connection.
Well, can you give us a few examples of these connections?
Well, just briefly, as much as time allows us, the third surah, for example, that's the Surah Al-Imran, it ends by ordaining people or addressing mankind to be Allah conscious. Yattaqullah, that you should be Allah conscious. The next one, number four, begins with the same theme of being Allah conscious. Ya ayyuha an-nas ittaqoo rabbakum, O humankind, be conscious or be Allah conscious. You know. For example, in the second surah, in Baqarah, it talks about the creation of Adam and creation of his wife Eve and how Allah placed them in paradise. Okay, so we're talking about Adam and his wife. You find that even if you go in as far as the fourth surah, you find it deals with another aspect of this relationship between Adam and Eve in broad sense. In the very first verse of that surah, it indicates that Allah created humankind from the same origin, from the same pair of male and female, and as such try to remind us of our common origin and our basic nature. In the second surah, it describes certain laws pertaining to the rights of orphans, the will that one makes before his death, the law of inheritance, marriage. And even if you go not just to the third surah, even if you continue to the fourth surah, you find that there is still more details given about these issues of marriage or family laws and related issues. In surah number two, it describes how Allah created Adam without a father or mother. He didn't come from a man's side or woman's side. And that seemed to have been in preparation to what surah number three tries to emphasize about the creation of Jesus, peace be upon him, from a woman's side, but not from a man's side. That these are just similar in one sense to the miracle of the creation of Adam. It goes on to, in Surah number 4, to respond to the Jews also who did not say many kind things about Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him. And as such, you see some connection. On one hand, the Quran tried to avoid the extreme or exaggeration, such as deifying Jesus, the servant, the creature of Allah. On the other hand, it responded to the Jews who went to the other extreme also by, accusing him of all kinds of things or being imposter and so on. So neither of them is correct. So the connection between the three surahs seem to be like links in the same chain. There are numerous examples, you can really point out to, and I think there might be time to continue with if you wish, I can give you
Before I start, we'll talk about the fruit that you give us, maybe a few more of these connections.
Okay. One interesting observation, for example, that was made by some scholars of the Quran is that if you really examine the first five surahs in the Quran, you will notice that if you exclude the first one, because the first one, as indicated, is essentially a sort of supplication or prayer. It's like the opening chapter, praying to Allah to provide us with guidance and support and so on. But if you continue to the fourth long chapters, you will find that all of them, that's number 2, 3, 4, and 5, all of them were revealed in Medina, the Medinite surahs. And it begins with number 2, Al-Baqarah, which actually began to be revealed first in Medina. In other words, was among the very first that was revealed when the Prophet migrated from Mecca to Medina. Whereas Surah number 5, known as Al-Ma'idah, or the table spread, was the last surah that was revealed in Medina, according to At-Tirmidhi. In other words, even these four surahs after the first chapter, the four long ones, are all Medinite surahs, and the beginning and end seem somehow to correspond to the earlier Medinite revelation and the later Medinite revelation. And like I said before, this is only a glimpse of various aspects that could be discussed about the order of the Quran. There have been volumes written about that. I realize, of course, the difficulty of not having, for the average or most viewers, having a copy of the Quran in front of them to go in some detail and explain all of this, but to go into these details perhaps which requires a much longer period of time. But I hope that at least the essence of it has been clarified, that there is definitely some reason why the surahs in the Quran are put in that particular order. Some scholars might be able to point to some, but even if they can point to all of them, at least that should give us enough confidence and trust that there is a divine wisdom behind every single thing in the Quran.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Jamal. You seem to explain that very adequately. And thank you for joining us here in Islam in Focus. Hope to see you next week. From all of us, assalamu alaikum.
أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله. أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله.